Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education. Sean Delaney is my name and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. You can listen to or download podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on our website, which is insideed.com. If you have any comments or suggestions for future programmes, please email insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. That email address again is insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Coming up on today's programme.
The problem with teaching is that it's an extremely difficult job that looks easy. And both parts of that cause trouble for teachers, and it also makes it difficult to do teacher education well.
I bring you an interview that I conducted recently with one of the top commentators on teaching and teacher education in the United States. He is Professor David Labrie from Stanford University. David Labrie is a historian of education who has thought deeply and written books about schools, teaching and teacher education. His books include The Trouble with Ed Schools, How to Succeed in School Without Really Learning, and Education, Markets and the Public Good. My conversation with David Labrie ranged over topics such as the difficult work that schools are expected to do, the difference between succeeding in school and learning, the complexity of teaching and how this complexity makes it difficult to educate future teachers. David Labrie's latest book is called Someone Has to Fail. In this book, he describes how schools are asked to do impossible things.
Schools are constantly having new missions thrown on them. There's a social problem out there, schools will fix it. We have inequality, schools will make inequality go away. We don't have enough social mobility, schools will provide people with opportunity. The economy is not growing, schools will provide the human capital capacities that we need to do things well. If there's teenagers are having sex before marriage, we need a sex ed class. Drivers don't drive well, we need a driver's ed class. We need, you know, the ecology is going to hell, so we need to have a unit in class that teaches about ecology. We don't want to pay for a good public health system, so we hire a school nurse and have a little health unit that we teach them, which is supposed to fix the problem. So there's a lot of problems that we could probably fix through the political process, but that would be expensive and difficult. So we throw them on schools instead. And then schools, which can't really do any of these things well, when they fail, which they are likely to do, they get blamed for it. And then schools are a problem. Schools need to be fixed. We need to reform them so that they'll carry out this impossible mission better.
Although David says that this impossible mission for schools applies to the United States, I think that much of what he says about the tasks given to schools will resonate with Irish listeners. In an earlier book called How to Succeed in School Without Really Learning, David Labrie describes the difference between doing well in school and learning something worthwhile. Again, Labrie is referring to the US context, but if you keep our own junior and leaving certificate exams in mind, you will find that his ideas have relevance in Ireland as well.
What schools are very best at is teaching people how to do school. So you learn how to give the teacher what the teacher wants. You learn how to anticipate what's going to be on the test. You learn how to study strategically, focusing on the things you need, and it's a system that in many ways rewards people for doing the least learning they have to get the best grade. And so there's a lot of gamesmanship that people learn in school. They learn, you know, the most devastating question for a teacher often is when somebody says, is this going to be on the test? It's like, oh, no. In other words, if I say no, then nobody's going to care. They're going to close their notebooks and say, okay, wait until something important happens. But, you know, teachers don't want to be the ones that say everything has to be on the test. It's supposed to be, this is interesting. This is important. You should know this. Someday you're going to really be glad you can do this. Well, but it's the problem is that it does look like a game where my job is to, in the American setting, you've got credits you pick up and then you get grades. And if you get the correct grades, then you pick up credits. And if you get enough credits, you get a degree. So how do I get, it's like buying a used car. How do I get the best car I can for the least money? How can I get the best grade for the least effort? How can I get the best degree with the most minimal investment? It only makes sense as a consumer, as a rational consumer, to get your education on the cheap. And so that really encourages a kind of gamesmanship where you really learn how to do school, but learning becomes at best a side effect of schooling rather than the main effect.
So is there anything then that gives you hope for the power of education, whether it's at the level of teachers or at the level of students?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I tell teachers is, you know, you can't do anything about the structural situation you find yourself in. School is school. Students are students. You don't have a lot of resources. But you try to do what you can where you are. And one of the things is they may not want to be there. They may not want to be there to learn. But your job is in many ways to lure them into learning anyway. And to find ways of drawing against their better judgment, against their thinking as a rational consumer, they may actually do more work than they have to because they really decide they like poetry or they're enjoying learning the kind of skill of solving mathematical problems or they get totally entranced by history. This is really good teachers are really good at taking what looks like a lifeless and difficult situation and somehow making it into a place where kids actually want to show up, where they want to do the work and they want to volunteer for more. That's enormously satisfying for a teacher, but I'm just trying to say we need to provide a better sense of respect for how difficult it is to do that. In some ways, a really good teacher is working against the grain of the structural setting in which they find themselves.
You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. You can listen to or download previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com. I'm speaking this week to Professor David Labarie of Stanford University about his views on teaching, teacher education, learning and schools. The challenges of being and becoming a teacher was a topic that David Labarie discussed at length during our interview. He summed up the challenges as follows.
The problem with teaching is that it's an extremely difficult job that looks easy.
Let's take the difficult part first. David identified three reasons why teaching is difficult.
You start out with a student who controls how successful you are as a professional. Most professionals are able to deploy their services in a way that they control the outcome. A lawyer can speak for a mute client. In fact, she prefers to have the client stay quiet. A surgeon operates on an anesthetized patient. The last thing the surgeon wants is your cooperation. They just want you to keep out of the picture. But a teacher doesn't succeed unless the student chooses to learn what the teacher is teaching. The willingness of the student to learn is a huge problem because it means you only succeed if they let you succeed. And so a huge amount of your skill as a teacher is finding ways to motivate students to learn. And only that way do they make you look good. Otherwise, you look bad. And you're going to take the blame for any bad outcomes, even though you have only a very limited impact on those outcomes. A second related problem is that students don't volunteer to be students. They're compulsory students. They're conscripts. And so usually when you go to a professional, you go asking for help. Nobody goes to their third grade teacher or fourth grade teachers and asks to learn how to write in script. Nobody begs the teacher to teach about plane geometry and proofs. Nobody's coming in asking for that, and so you not only have students who control the success of your practice as a teacher, but you also are dealing with students who are not there of their own free will and feel like, yeah, teach me, I dare you, make me like it. So that even ramps up further the problem of motivation, because in many ways I think a teacher has to almost trick students into learning. On top of that, who's your client when you're a teacher? I mean, you know, who is your client? Is it typically the client's very obvious. It's the patient comes in to see the doctor. I'm paying you. I've got the problem. I'm asking for your help. Is the student the client? To some extent, sure. But the student is not asking to be there, so that's not really the client. Is it the parents? Well, in a way, you have to keep parents happy as a teacher. But often parents are just a third party in the transaction that's hard to deal with, and their views don't really carry, because there's another group there. There's the town as a whole that has its own school system, and so in some ways maybe it's the citizens of that town that are your client. So how do you please all of those constituencies? You really can't. All of them can cause you trouble as a teacher. They are all things you have to try to manage. And so it's this hugely complex emotional, personal, relationship, social, structural setting, and we haven't even talked about the subject matter you have to know and the various pedagogical skills you need to get it across.
So that's why teaching is difficult. But the real problem arises because despite its many difficulties, teaching is work that looks easy.
It looks easy to most people because everybody is an expert on schooling. We all sat in school for 12 years and then maybe more in college and after that. And so we've observed schooling up close and personal like we never observe any other occupation, especially a profession. Professions tend to be obscure. They're distant. They have their own language. You see them occasionally, and they do mysterious things. Nothing mysterious about teaching. You stand up there. You talk. You hand things out. You correct people when they're wrong. You give tests, and you make people stand in line. It's like big deal. You know, it looks like a form of much easier form than parenting. It seems like any adult could do this. And so there's this perception, even among teacher candidates, which is a big problem for teacher education programs, they also come in and say, I know what teaching's all about. I kind of like school. I can see what it's about. I can do this. So why are you making me go through a professional program and putting me in schools and a supervised term? Just set me loose. I can do it. And so that's very hard. I mean, one other thing that makes it look easy that I think is difficult is that, of course, behind all of those actions of teachers, all we ever see is their actions. We don't see their thinking. So you don't have any idea what was she trying to do, how did she plan this, how did she choose to make to call on this person, not this person, to move ahead or to pause and pick up on a point that somebody raised. How did she do all that? None of the thinking is there, and so it looks like it's just an automatic thing. You have it or you don't, and that's a take that people have had on teacher education programs for many years, and it's still very alive. That all you need to, if you know your subject matter and you're a good, decent person who treats people fairly, you can teach. It's like, why go through all of the Mickey Mouse stuff of taking teacher preparation classes if you don't have to? And one last thing that makes it look easy, I think, is that as we get older, I think we increasingly discount the role that teachers had and where we are, because it seems like what teachers are teaching you is the stuff that every adult more or less knows and can do. So it seems hard at the time when you're a kid, but later on it seems nothing mysterious about it and nothing particularly elevated about it. And so, you know, you don't need teachers after a certain point. You outgrow them. You never outgrow your lawyer, your accountant, your doctor, and other people. But teachers are in the business of giving their expertise away. They try to make themselves unnecessary. They try to allow you to learn on your own and not need the teacher anymore. But you have to keep coming back to the tax accountant and to the lawyer and the doctor. They don't give away their expertise. They rent it to you, but they reserve it to themselves. Teachers give it away. And so it looks like, well, it can't be that big a deal if they give it away.
So if teaching is a difficult job that looks easy, this causes problems for those who prepare teachers to do this difficult work. What is it that prospective teachers have to learn? David Labrie identified some questions that teacher educators have to answer.
How do you teach people to be really fast on their feet, really responsive, having a plan and then adjusting the plan in the middle? One of the studies I like pointed out that a teacher during the course of a day makes something like 4,000 individual decisions all the time. And that's like, and every one of them matters. And you have to have enough expertise and enough self-confidence to say, I think this time I'm going to ignore that question and move ahead. And this other time I'm going to actually pause and we'll get into it because I think this is a real opportunity I shouldn't miss. These are very important things, and yet they happen at blindingly quick speed. And it's like any good profession. You really have to be, you have to have all the formal training. You have to have all the skills put together so that what you do ends up looking natural and it ends up feeling natural. It feels like I'm not thinking about this, I'm just doing the right thing. Just the way a golfer, professional golfer, doesn't think about the position of the elbow and how his grip is. It's all a natural process and it happens. But to learn it, they have to go through all of that process of thinking, positioning your feet, shifting your weight. And so it's a long time that it takes a teacher to get to that speed where it feels and looks natural.
How then can colleges of education prepare teachers to become naturals at something that is anything but natural?
The program I'm most familiar with is the ones that we had at Michigan State and at Stanford. And I think both of those were ones where the people gave really careful thought and used a lot of research to support the way they structured the program in order to put this whole package of skills together. The problem is that that's actually a very difficult thing to do. It takes a lot of faculty expertise. It actually draws on a lot of research. And it's very labor-intensive. And one of the problems with teaching is that it's a profession, but it's a mass profession. The kind of teacher education I'm talking about is the professional preparation program that involves senior faculty, not adjuncts or retired teachers doing all the work. And it involves small classes, a lot of close supervision, and an extensive time both in classroom and in the field. And so that's economically a challenging thing to do, especially now when universities around the world seem to be cutting back resources or finding themselves trying to operate, teach more students with less money. To turn toward a more labor-intensive and expensive model of teacher education seems counterintuitive. On the other hand, given the fact that this is the one institution where everybody has to pass through it, and where the impact is on the entire society, not just on some small segment of it, I mean, how can we not do that? I mean, how can we not say that's an important place to put resources? But think about having to call for a more expensive, more intensive, more professional program in this time of when we're trying to find shortcut ways and inexpensive ways of doing education. You can't do it in an online program. You know, you can't do it in a mass lecture. It just doesn't work well. If you do it that way, you're going to end up with mediocre teachers and problems in the school, which is about too often what we do have.
So what can inspire people to be the kind of teachers that we need in schools today?
Good teachers spend a lifetime working on their craft. So they spend a lot of time conversing with each other. They spend a lot of time doing professional development or taking graduate courses. They spend a lot of time visiting each other's classrooms, reading about their subject area, and so on. So I think a lot of it is, it's not something that ends when you finish your teacher preparation course. That's just when it starts. It never ends. For younger teachers, I think it's good to look for models around you, and often in writing that you can find in books. There's a book I use with teacher ed students over the years by Sam Friedman, who was the education writer for the New York Times for years. It's a book called Small Victories, and it's a lovely portrait of a single teacher, Jessica Siegel, who was an English teacher in a high school in Manhattan that was mostly made up of immigrant kids, first generation immigrants. A very difficult place to teach in many ways, and she was teaching the hardest subject, not just English, but she was trying to teach them how to write. She herself was a journalist on the side, and so her thing was, I'm going to teach them how to write. I mean, that's a very... Writing is hard for everybody. Writing in a second language is brutally difficult. And, you know, you're operating as a teacher where you're trying to draw them in. But he has some wonderful extended scenes in there of just watching a master teacher at work. She had them read The Great Gatsby. Now, the story of a rich guy in the 1920s for a bunch of immigrant kids, like, what's the deal? But she had had them read The Great Gatsby and Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And what she did was, he watched her set up and then orchestrate a discussion where the students started seeing themselves as Gatsby. The outsider, Jay Gatz, trying to get ahead, trying to pass, and being found out and being snookered by the old wealth people who think of him as a bounder. And, you know, they see through King and that the American dream, but also how difficult that is, how and how many problems there are, and how the situation makes things difficult. But for those kids, it was like they saw themselves in it. They were able to take this, could have been completely alienating piece of literature from another world, and see some kind of broader truth and some kind of personal mission in it. So I think there's some really good accounts in writing where you can get that kind of feel, and you start observing. I would warn against using the portrayals in movies, which is which I think are very facile and rather dangerous. You know, the Dead Poets Society. I mean, how many people are Robin Williams? Can you stand up in front of a class and riff like crazy and keep everybody entertained and do manic stuff? No. So that's not a model that's sensible. It also makes teaching look impossible, because I can't do that. I think often it's in novels and in journalistic accounts and some good ethnographic research where you really get a feel of what's happening in classrooms and how somebody makes the magic happen. It's not magic, it just looks like it when it all comes together. And a lot of it is learning how somebody who's a natural got there. It's often hard for teachers who are a natural to teach somebody how to do it, because one of the dangers is if you're really good at a profession, it depends on a fluidity. That means you're not sitting down and thinking about every step, because then you get frozen in place and you're not, you're grind to a halt. And so I think once you've gotten to the point where you're fluid, you almost don't want to take it apart. It's like a golfer in the middle of a game deciding to reinvent his swing, you know, and say, I'm going to position myself differently. I'm going to go back. It's like, no, and then it all falls apart. Then you can't even hit the ball anymore. And so I think for teachers, it's a little, they may not be able to verbalize it anyway, because it's now become part of their persona. But it also may be a little scary, because if I start thinking it too much, I'm going to lose this delicate balance that I've established. So I think it makes it very hard, even when you're with a good teacher, to have that person tell you about it. You have to, a lot of it is what you learn on the job, but you have to have a kind of preparation in advance that gives you a good sense of what you need to work toward and what you're looking for.
Well, that's it for this week's Inside Education. Remember that if you want to contact the programme with comments or suggestions, you can email insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. That email address again is insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can always download or listen to podcasts of previous programmes from our website, which is www.insideed.com. That website address again is insideed.com. I want to thank this week's guest on the programme, Professor David Labbery from Stanford University. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.